Welcome back to the Why Hockey Periodical Podcast. With me is Matthew Lichtenstatter. I'm Thomas Krulikowski. First row of the year. How does it feel?
It feels like that gif of Vincent Trocheck kissing Jonathan Huberdeau. If only there were more times I felt like that. And in case you're wondering, no, I didn't save that gif to my computer. Why would you ever suspect such a thing?
Because it's saved to our phones.
It's not saved to my phone either, but why would you suspect I would do such a thing? Why would anybody guess that?
I don't know.
It's an attack on my character. I'm kidding. It's not an attack on anybody's character. It's a fantastic thing. That is probably the best moment of the Panthers season thus far. I'm going to actually start, Tommy. I'm going to posit a couple of theories to you. You ready for these?
Yep.
Okay. Which of these has more validity? Will it be the glass half full theory, which is the Panthers have played in 7-1 goal games, have looked really bad, but they have no saves, they have no specialty teams, and this is probably, in some cases, the worst that they could play, and they've been in 7-1 goal games, and many of their losses are puck bounces. Or you could go with the glass half empty theory, which is they're on the precipice of complete disaster, and if it wasn't for the fact that these were puck bounce games, they could be even worse. Which do you think has more validity?
The latter, but I'm fairly certain it's somewhere in the middle of going into the season. We knew that there were some pressure points, some pain points, and we knew there were possible really big pain points, like Luongo getting hurt first game of the season. And it happened. Talon and company took a risk that it wouldn't happen. And they probably thought that they would maybe use Hutchinson two or three times this year, but
they already have used him two or three times.
I can't see Hutchinson playing less than a dozen games this year for the Panthers, and that's very bad.
We will get to goaltending. I think that's a separate discussion in of itself. I agree with you that we're kind of in the middle of there's a lot of bad, but there is good. I've been trying to look.
There's good, and that's why they've been able to get some points out of games here. I mean, it's because Hoffman has gotten every shot blocked he's taken and yet still has, what, three or four goals?
Four goals.
Right?
Here are some of the other things.
Like, their offense is good. It doesn't matter that Bob Bugner can't construct a lineup. He can still manage to make good lines because 12 or 11 forwards a night are good.
This is something that I think we should say. They're averaging more than three goals a game. I know even in October in a league now that's scoring a billion trillion goals, if you average more than three goals a game, you're going to win more than you lose. The real reason why the Panthers are, you know why the reasons the Panthers are not playing very well right now, but I want to focus firstly on a couple of positives from the last two games, and I think we all agree that those were the best two Panther games 5-on-5. Against the Rangers, it didn't matter because they didn't get a save. And against the Islanders, they almost got PDO'd to death, but they ended up winning the game anyway. But those were the best two Panther games 5-on-5. They have not been bad at 5-on-5 any game overall. I checked puck on net, and they're actually 7th in score-adjusted Corsi for, which is whatever it is you want it to mean. But it means that the Panthers have actually not been that terrible 5-on-5. It's a lot of other things that are killing them, like specialty teams, individual mistakes, and not being able to get a save. But when you look at them 5-on-5, they haven't played a bad 60 minutes. They haven't played a good 60 minutes or complete 60 minutes at at regulation. But the fact is like there hasn't been a game where I'm like, wow, that was completely awful. There have only been moments in every game where I said, wow, that was terrible. Now, there are more of those moments, and when those moments happen, they spiral out of control, which is something else we'll get into. But I think overall, part of this, if you really wanted to boil it down to one sentence with the Panthers right now, you might be able to reasonably say, this Panthers team is playing like it is because it doesn't think it's going to get a save. That might be basically the way you could boil down the season. And if you think that, and it's a reasonable theory, then if Luongo comes back and plays like Roberto Luongo, you could easily see this team snap off 5 and 6 straight wins and start looking good again.
Goaltending is a big issue, and it's the number one issue. And it's we knew it was going to be the number one issue.
It's the biggest issue of a number of
possible
concerns.
But I'm not sure Florida would not be in a similar situation if they were getting saves. I mean, there are still a lot of structural issues with the Florida Panthers. However, there's also the effect of the team is now changing the way they play because they do not expect good goaltending.
We talked about that last year. Is like, how much better did the Panthers look when Luongo plays? Like, everybody plays better when they have their best goaltender in. This is obvious. And it, the Panthers, it seemed really notable when Luongo wasn't there. You could see that they played a lot more, you know, protect the house kind of defensive hockey, which is play not to lose and play that you can give your goaltender every chance to make the one save he has to make. And that's not a way to play. But I think when you look at it overall, again, if a team's doing decently well 5-on-5, as the Panthers are doing, then they're doing
something. I don't know if they are doing decently well 5-on-5. What they are set up to do is get a lot of Corsis. And they're not gaming the system.
Corsis?
No. They're just not playing smart hockey. They're playing dumb hockey. They're getting a lot of shots, but they're dumb shots. They're not shots that are what they should be taking, and they're looking off or not even getting to good shooting spots because they're taking the dumb shots. They're taking the shots 5 feet into the blue line, Trocheck missing the net, and breaking out for the other team, or you know Hoffman getting it blocked or whomever. I mean, all four lines have done this, mainly not the first line. Everything I say usually does not apply to the first line.
This is true.
You're going to get some goals. And the Florida Panthers have good enough shooters and crashed the net well enough this year. Bukestad had a great game last night doing that. And they'll get enough goals to hang in games. But is that the best utilization of their offense? No. They could be scoring more like some of these other teams if they were more efficient off the rush, if they had maybe better lines constructed. Like, the second line is not a line put together to succeed. It's a line to put together to get a lot of shots, to have the puck a lot, but to do a bunch of nothing. It just doesn't – the players put together just – the playing style doesn't work. You can see Trocheck getting so frustrated because he does not have the puck enough when it's Hoffman, him, and Huberto. You could see it. He just does not have the puck enough, and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do when he can't take 5,000 shots, or he can't take, you know, do 3,000 circles in the neutral zone and take the puck the whole way. And the Panthers have to figure out a way to work around that or find him a suitable partner. Huberto needs to go back with Barkov because they just work together. Just put it back together. I don't know why you'd ever take it. You can move Dadonov, you can move Bukestad. I don't care, but put Huberto and Barkov back together. Huberto doesn't work with Trocheck.
I think it's reasonable to say that, and I'm surprised we haven't seen it because you know Bob Bugner likes to change his lines every 10 seconds, but I will say that your theory about the second line is probably parsed out with the numbers when you see their puck possession numbers are probably the best on the team, but it's a matter of where you get the chances. And, I mean, I did not watch most of that game last night, to be fair, but that line seems like it kind of seems like, I don't want to call this the Hurricanes theory because that's kind of crass, which is we're going to inflate the shot numbers to get the Corsi up, and you see where the Hurricanes' puck possession numbers are right now. They have been in recent years. Like, it's kind of like that, but, I mean, it's like, even then, Trocheck still is averaging a point a game. Jonathan Huberto still has 7 points. And, I mean, whether it's talent overcoming bad coaching, which I think is some part of it, or otherwise, you know, they have had good games. All of them have had individual games, even though Colton Sevier's played on that second line too much. You know, we can see that at least for the forwards, the talent's winning out. They're doing good
but
things.
What you're giving up, I mean, it's for people who don't really like or, you know, are more newer to hockey and maybe you have a better football thing. It's like if you score a lot, like you're down and out and you score, but and you always, you know, you're always down and out. You never eat up time. You never build momentum and have a good running game and stuff. And
what
you just
you're
go
saying is you are talking about the Chip Kelly Philadelphia Eagles. Is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm not as well versed in football, but
what you're talking about.
The Panthers are like defensively. If you're not a very good cohesive defensive team, it's an issue when you play high event, low possession hockey in the neutral zone and the offensive zone. Like we've said in other podcasts, it's not that the players necessarily aren't playing well, and I see a lot of people on Twitter or Reddit or something saying like they need to have more desperation, they need to play more desperate or be more hungry for pucks, and I don't think that's the issue, and I don't think, you know, Bugner barking at them or, you know, making them or benching guys to send messages or anything like that, like that's gonna work. It's a cohesion issue. It's not playing to the strengths and not having line construction or strategies that play to the team's strengths and weaknesses. Defensively, if you're struggling defensively, you don't want to be one in, you know, down and out, take go off a rush, take a shot, miss net high wide, and go back the other way all the time and go 200 feet up and down the ice over and over again. If you are trying to balance your lines, you don't want to just be running your guys up and down. Something Bugner said, he wants to balance the guys, keep them fresh. The Panthers are just running up and down the ice, chasing the puck. They have to play a more structured game. And I don't necessarily, there's tons of structures they can play. I'm not an NHL coach. They should have hired a coach who would be able to put in the right structure. But right now they don't have that coach. He hasn't proven to be that coach. And they need to find a structure that works for the team and that allows them to have longer, more meaningful puck possession, that allows them to get the puck back. But when they can't get the puck back, to not fall apart, to not crumble when they can't get the puck back in the first 5 seconds in the D zone and just run around, chase the puck and have both their D above the hash marks, leaving guys in front of the crease. Like, last night, I forget who it was, but somebody was standing in the crease for like 7 seconds, like all on their own, just right by Reimer, just completely on his own. And that happens. I mean, everybody listening to this podcast probably has already thought of three instances where that's happened in other games. But they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
It does. And, okay, I want to go for first to talk.
They're playing hard. They're playing hard.
They're not playing like you. They've had two multi-goal third period comebacks. It's not like they aren't playing with lack of effort. It's not for lack of trying. You know what I mean? And I agree with you there. So
and I'm not advocating for panic or anything like that. But you know, the same. It's getting frustrating to try to describe in different ways and try to find new examples of the same thing to illustrate why I'm not just constantly unimpressed by this Bob Bugner Florida Panthers team and this right. Dale Talon 2.0 Florida Panthers team.
Okay.
Like it's the same lack of understanding the goaltending issue, lack of understanding how to put together a lineup, lack of understanding how to make a defensive core work, how to actually get offense from the D end. Matheson and Ekblad look in two games looks so much better than they have in the last like year and a half.
This is and correct.
It's like, why was it even after Bob Bugner put them together, Bob Bugner's still like excusing why it took him so long and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like dragging his feet. And it's like, he gave him a bunch of Sour Patch Kids or Warheads or something. When he's talking about this, like he had to take his dog out back and shoot it, breaking up Ekblad and Yandel. It's like
he must have really liked it. Gives you each other.
It gives you. I don't see hope for things getting better this year when they're so far behind the eight ball and Dennis Malgin's a healthy scratch. Okay. I don't see hope when it took him this long to get away from Matheson and Ekblad, and we're all waiting for the other shoe to drop. We're all waiting for Pesek to come back healthy and for the combos to go right back to where they are, or for them to get out for that one goal against or something, and for Bob to just yank it, because that's what happens. And they beat a New York Islanders team that is just as chaotic structurally as them, is just as behind the eight ball as them. That
and they have the excuse of new coach
and not having an offensive
no
start.
John Tavares.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it was nice that they came back and won and turned it on for a period. Well, a few players turned it on for a period. And like I said, you know, the talent won out. It wasn't because they figured out what was wrong and did something to address it. It's just the talent went out this time. 2 out of 8 times the talent has won out. Only one of them has been a regulation or overtime win.
Well, they have
still haven't won
yet
in
60 minutes. They have not won a game in 60 minutes.
There's still a lot of issues, and we're roughly 10% into the season. Like, I think we have to admit that the finish last year doesn't matter. Like, the momentum doesn't carry over the summer. Like, people just expecting it to just pick up and like, oh, that's the team. Again, they're wrong. This is the Panthers. They start hot. I mean, they start slow, finish hot all the time. It's a mirage. I don't get Panthers need to show that they're not willingly selling this to fans anymore. That the Capuano has to be fired. Bugner has to be fired. They have to go make a trade. Talon has to be fired. They have to do something dynamically different in strategy with this team, because they have to climb out. Like, look, they're maybe in the wild card race right now. They have to be higher than that. They were expected to be higher than that. And they said that they expected to be higher than that. And they talked a big game that we're going to hold the team accountable. You got to do something. It's 8 games now. I'm not saying do panicky that, oh, we're just going to fire Bugner. But maybe you sit him down and you say, all right, we are changing the way we play defense. We're going to put together a new way of playing D. Or Dale Talon, you have to go get a goalie. You should have done this earlier. You have to go get one now. Give this team a chance. Don't end the season before it even starts, before it really gets going.
Wanted to say a few things. Firstly, I don't know how many people would disagree with you on the Capuano thing. I think he's getting a lot of heat now, rightfully so. But let's go back to an earlier point about structure. You're not a coach. I'm less of a coach than you are. I know less about hockey tactics than you do. But if you're a coach and you're given this exact roster, let's say you're going out and you're coaching against the Devils on Saturday for the Panthers. How do you structure this team? How do you want them to play? How do you maximize what you have available?
I mean, I think you look at how the first line plays and what they do well. And then you look at, well, you have the horses to kind of do it at every line now, especially, you know, with LaMico and Mammon playing well, with McCann playing well. You can play a down-low cycle, smart hockey. I think the key word is puck support. They have to get guys closer to the puck carriers. And when the other team has the puck, you got to get guys closer to the puck carrier. They got to be tighter to the puck and do a lot more short passes. I mean, it's great when Yandel throws a long bomb straight up the ice, but when it's the long bomb straight up the ice as the plan every time, it's really easy to jump that by the end of the 60 minutes. If you're an NHL coach on the other bench sitting there watching it, you see it. You're in the neutral zone. I mean, you're positioned in the neutral zone. You see it perfectly. By 10 minutes into the first period, you're like, all right, every 3 times, start jumping that blindly. And, you'll benefit from it.
I think that the times when you see the Panthers get bogged down the most is how many times that little bounce pass off the short boards into the neutral zone gets cut off and immediately they're pushed back. Like how many times does that happen when the Panthers are in a really bad spot?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it is also when the Panthers get the puck. They need to take ice and move with it.
Skate
towards support. Like, you kind of, you, if you have the puck carrier, you're dictating who's going to be a good option for you or not by where you're putting the puck on your blade, how you're positioning yourself to make the pass. I mean, someone could be wide open, but if you're not positioned to give them the puck quickly in the NHL, it's not going to get to them. So it's about, you know, it's a cohesion thing. Like, everyone has to support the puck. And right now, I think they're too spread out. They're too run and gun, which stretches them out. And they don't have, since it's high pace and back and forth, and they don't really know how to settle back in and reform, it stays stretched out for long periods of time.
It can contribute to offense, but it also means that defensively you're going to be a little bit bad, and the Panthers defensively have been bad.
And there's, you can make it work, run and gun that way, but you know, you got to walk before you crawl, or you, yeah, you know, you have to have the personnel
playing that way.
Yeah, you have to have the personnel to do it. But I mean, if you're playing Keith Yandel as your most frequent left-handed shot defenseman, you're going to have an issue playing that way, because he likes to be, he's got cement for feet. Like, he stands still more at the blue, he likes to play at the blue line. He doesn't like to necessarily move around a lot. And when he gets the puck, he's not the best at immediately taking ice or keeping his feet moving. And he gets caught flat-footed a lot defensively. So it's why he's probably out of position more than he should be, because it's a style that does, it's not conducive for him. And it's not necessarily his fault that he gets overplayed in the system.
Yeah, I want to go for some things. Let's talk about individual players. I've looked at the stats, and you could actually be surprised by some of them, and it's mostly the forwards. Is there anybody who you want to single out saying they're playing well? They've stood out enough to say, all right, they're having the good season that we expected them to. I don't think there's anybody that's been stood up like, wow, he's been amazing. But
well,
there's been a lot of forwards.
First line has been fine.
There's nothing wrong with the first line. I don't think there's anything. But Dadonoff has the most points. And I would probably say the best player for the Panthers right now has been Evgeny Dadonoff.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's always Barkov, but...
If we're not saying Barkov at a point where, like, he can't do every single thing that has ever been done, like there were points last year when he was doing, Dadonoff's probably been the best Panther forward. He's been good defensively. He's got 9 points. He just does the things that Evgeny Dadonoff does.
And that's what he's at the best, is when he's also making plays in the neutral zone and, you know, the scoring chances finishing as he's getting back into the play. But, you know, he'll, you know, take a hit and make a nice little chip pass to open up so much room for somebody else and get a rush and scoring chance started. And, you know, when he's off his game, he's not doing that as much. I mean, that's everybody. You know, when they're off their game, they're focusing on getting back on their game and not doing all the other stuff that they normally can do.
But I can't remember a time since Dadonoff was coming back from injury last year where he's really been off. Like, he's been just solid. Typical of Evgeny Dadonoff way in every single game this year. He's averaging more than a point a game.
To me, he's one of the reasons it was maybe worth putting Dale Talon back in the GM role to get Evgeny Dadonoff signed to that deal on this team.
How is that not one of the best contracts in the NHL at this point?
I mean, fantasy-wise, I don't see any complaints with people I know who's... You know, he's on the fantasy team. He's on my real team. I have no complaints. He's always one of the guys I always just know I don't have to worry about every night. It's nice. Nice to have.
Mike Hoffman's had an interesting start to the season. He's been on every single line except the first line. He's had some power play time, and they've juggled the power play, so now he's back on the second unit where it fits a little bit better. And even though every shot of his gets blocked, it seems, he still has 4 goals. And in spite of the fact that you could argue he's not being put in a position to succeed, he's still succeeding. And he's scored a goal now in 3 straight games as we record this on Thursday afternoon. we have not seen the best of Mike Hoffman yet, and he's still put in 4 goals, which is tied for the team lead. I think that shows you how talented of a player he is and what happens if he ends up getting put in a position to succeed. I think he fits better on the third line than he does the second if it's constructed as it is right now with Trocheck and Huberto, if we go by putting lines together in pairs. And, I mean, for all that being said, I can't really be mad at Mike Hoffman right now for the way he's playing. There's been times when he hasn't done what you would have hoped he would do, but, I mean, he still scored 4 goals. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I have no worries about Mike Hoffman at this point. I mean, you have to remember he came from an Ottawa offense where he had to do a lot. I mean, he's a winger, but he was doing more center responsibilities of, I have to be the main puck distributor. I have to develop plays, kind of like an Evgeny Dadonov. I have to be that type of dynamic winger, like we were just talking about. And I think when you put it on the line with Huberto and Trocheck and him, it's hard for him to do that. He has less ability to just go and demand the puck all the time, to keep the puck when he wants to. When you put him on the third line with McCann and, you know, whoever, Vetrano, Malgin, I mean, Mammon, I mean, whoever it would be, I think he would get a lot of time of carrying the puck in on the zone entries, dictating what's going to happen off the rush, being the main guy they look to when they're breaking out of the zone or entering the zone or off the faceoff and all that stuff. And he's used to it, which is good to get him going. But, you know, at the end of the day, it might be he needs it to be successful at his highest level.
And it also doesn't give him the same sort of defensive... I mean, he's not a bad defensive forward, but he doesn't have to do as much defensively if he's playing on the third line. You know, he's going to get more zone starts in the offensive zone. And he's played fine. I mean, it's not been great, but he's not been horrible. And I think that considering where he's been and where he's played with and who he's played with, he's been actually pretty good, as I said.
And his final resting spot might not be there. So
yeah.
We'll see. We'll take it out as it goes.
Because with Bob Bugner, the lines change every 10 seconds, and they still yet don't work. In terms of other players, I think, you know, Trocheck and Huberto each have, like, Trocheck's got 8 points, Huberto's got 7 points. There's a lot of frustrated Vinny, we see that. I mean, as I said, I kind of agree with you that Huberto and Barkov should play together again, and if you had a Bugstad, Trocheck, and anybody, like, Malgin line, I think it would work. I'd like to see it, but... I mean, like, if you're talking just about straight offensive production and in terms of trying to drive the play offensively, doing what they're being told to do, they're not doing a bad job of it. Like, they haven't had bad seasons. They've had bad moments, but they're not having bad seasons. They're both playing to the way we expected them to, and if they continue the point production that they're continuing on right now, they're going to be fine. They're going to beat their seasons from last year. And, again, no one can really complain about that just from a pure offensive perspective.
Whether it really means anything, though, grand scheme of things. I mean, I think face-offs would be the only thing I would say that I would really want them to start improving in as a team. I know there's, you know, numbers that say that it's negligible whether it influences a game, but every once in a while it does, or, you know, it for a center, it really bugs them. It can undermine the confidence. And a guy like Trocheck, who's that competitive, I'm sure losing faceoffs all the time and being going back and looking at that is because I'm sure he probably gets all the faceoffs loaded to his iPad or something after the game and watches them and probably gets stuck in his head or whatever. But
well, that's Vinny Trocheck. That's who he kind of is. Like, he had some really dumb frustration penalties, and I'm like, that's Vincent Trocheck. That's what he does. At a point, I'm like, this is stupid, but this is who he is as a player. And I don't want that taken out of his game.
Mike Matheson is the same way, and it's...
I mean, you need those kinds of players on your team.
But Bugner, as a coach, has to find a way to diffuse that, to get him in a situation where he's not going to be as frustrated. I mean, same with Matheson. He's done it with the Matheson-Ekblad, and Matheson has looked great. Ekblad has 2 assists now. If there's anything... any part of Ekblad's game that besides, I would say, I would probably say more like his agility defending, like his lateral movements. but is his assists, is his playmaking, is not just the – he's really good on the first pass out of the D zone, which is super important for a defenseman, can't be overlooked.
Well, especially but this NHL.
I think, incredibly I think important. Create not getting any assists just from shots, creating as a playmaker from the blue line, whether it's jumping in, stepping off the blue line and finding an open guy and making the play there, or from the blue line, like faking a shot and finding some of those more finesse plays. It's showing that he's more comfortable this year. He's adding more aspects to his game and that he's still improving. So I like to see that.
And the things that people think Keith Yandle should do, but he can't do. Okay. I want to talk about some lower down forwards in the lineup, but let's get to the defense, because I think that's what everybody wants to talk about at this point.
Yeah, the forwards have been, I mean, like, the forwards, they've been as expected. They've been fine. The fourth liners have been the ones we talk about.
Well, because Lamico's come in and proven that he is a legit NHL fourth line center.
And Derek McKenzie is getting shoulder surgery and is out for long-term.
I feel bad for him as a person, obviously.
I think this is, you know, the Willie Mitchell. I think this is the Willie Mitchell. This is, you know, Captain Poolside. This is...
Robida Island.
Yeah. I mean, this has happened a lot in Florida Panthers history. So, I don't think it's anything that great, but I think... I'm just happy it's over. And seems to be over, that there's not going to be any...
It's horrible what happened with Michael Haley, too, but it's kind of in that same vein, you know?
This podcast right now.
Fair to say that. In terms of the defense, we had been screaming for them to break up Ekblad and Yandle, and it took them that Detroit game for them to do it. And I wrote about it on the Rat Trick. I said it was necessary. They had to do it. They did it for one game last year, and then they went back to it. I was really scared that they were going to do it in the Ranger game, and they didn't. And then against the Islanders, they didn't break it up either. And when I said their best two games of the season, 5-on-5, were the last two games, you could see why. Like, everything just seems more balanced. Yes, they lost 5-2 to the Rangers, but you can blame a lot of that on just Michael Hutchinson not making saves. But you can see, that was bad, but you can see just the pairings as they're constructed now just work better. Like, Mike Matheson with Mark Pesek, he would be liable for 2 or 3 really boneheaded mistakes a game. And the same was true with Yandle. They're now playing with partners where that element of them, even if it's still there are mistakes like that, they are neutered in their impact in more ways.
Halfway there.
Halfway, okay.
Yandle, Petrovic is, for two reasons, I think, a temporary partner for Yandle. I think what ultimately they need to do is get Bogdan Kiselevich on that second pair with Yandle. I think if you want to keep playing Yandle this much and using him this much, that's the best way to do it.
Kiselevich is more offensively gifted than Petrovic is, though I have to say.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Petrovic is he plays the same style as Yandle. Like, he's prone to the same mistakes as Yandle, getting caught flat-footed in the same mistakes, kind of pivoting the wrong way, or, you know, kind of like Pisek. Like, they should not be together. So I think you can have Petrovic Pisek together. For whatever reason, and a third pairing, low minutes, that's worked in the past. I'd be willing to try that again. I think ideally you want McDonald back up at the NHL level. I mean, he's 25, right? I mean, he's putting up really good numbers in the AHL. I think that's your left-handed third pair defenseman. And Weegar, I guess, or Mikoshin, or somebody else will rotate in.
Let's talk about Ekblad and Matheson, because I think that's really important, because Mike Matheson, obviously, with the suspension, with the hit, and we haven't had a chance to talk about that, but let's not, because it's old hat at this point. But...
Well, let's just say...
It was stupid.
It was stupid of Matheson, but it was stupid to be 2-game suspension.
Oh, it was ridiculous. You and I had a conversation... And after the suspension was announced, and It was an animated discussion. And then Pesek got hit up high by Alex Ovechkin in a somewhat similar way. I know you don't think that hit was that bad. I think it was borderline not great.
Well, the suspension on Borecki on
Vakanainen
on Boston, that was one game.
And that was how Matheson got two. Elias Pettersson plays for the Vancouver Canucks is basically why it was like that. If this was Matheson on Sutter, there wouldn't have been a suspension. Or if this was Matheson on Clayton Keller. If it's Panthers Coyotes, would he have been suspended? No, he wouldn't have, because no one would have watched the game.
I just think it's a Panther. He's always going to be suspended.
I'm not going into that. I buy more into Canucks fans got butt hurt is basically what I think is more what it was. But whatever the case may be.
Here's the thing. Yandel doesn't have the mobility that Matheson does. And guess who else had that mobility? Brian Campbell.
Yep.
There's a reason it worked. It's because
Campbell was just so good. Ahead of his time as a defenseman.
He's always able to help Ekblad cover whatever. So Ekblad has confidence. And when Ekblad has confidence, that's all that matters with him. And then the best thing with Matheson for getting play with Ekblad is Ekblad is probably one of the best defensemen in the NHL at supporting his partner. He is very good at my partner's in trouble in the corner. I'm going to be able to help him out. I'm going to be an outlet. He's got the puck on the breakout. I'm always open. I'm always an outlet. That was Pissick's biggest failing. That is Pissick's biggest failing. And Matheson had so many errors of just running around trying to make a play with no support. He's not going to have that. Those stupid boneheaded once-a-game Matheson errors will be weeded out because he'll be getting support a lot earlier and he won't be making those desperation passes, those desperation plays with a guy on his back.
Seems like it. I do want to say for Petrovich, I mean, the Yandel-Petrovich pairing is probably not one, as you said, that's going to last because they're both really kind of
slow. And then another reason is not that he's slow, it's just a playing style. Petrovic's playing some of the best hockey he's played. So it's crazy to think
the best two Panthers defensemen this year have been Jacob McDonald and Alexander Petrovich. I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I mean, sign of the times, I guess, really.
Well, it's now maybe it's starting to change now that they broke up the bad pairings. But, I mean, Petrovich through eight games has been the best of a Panthers defense group that has not played.
They got to keep them together. And then they got to get McDonald back up if he continues to play this well in the NHL.
This is what I was saying, like, right now.
I'm worried about what happens when Pissett comes back because, I mean, I think he
replaces Uyghur, at least for the time being. And
only because Uyghur has only just recently started to look anything like last year Uyghur.
Yes.
Which, you know, he had a tough camp and he's taken a while to bounce back. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, say he's done and gone forever. They should trade him. But it is likely that Petrovic is still on the trading block. And I wouldn't be opposed to it.
How many teams in the NHL would want Alexander Petrovic? How many teams in the league want a defenseman like that? Everybody.
Yeah, so. I mean, a lot of teams would, and you can get a decent draft pick back, and maybe that'll recoup some of their second round losses they've had in the last couple of years.
Well, if he's playing that well, I mean, I could think of a number of teams that would like a defenseman like that, but we will see.
He's showing himself to be a very capable third pairing defenseman for a playoff team.
And you need those.
I think it's half because he's playing well and he's earning it, but also I think the other half is showcasing him a bit, why he's on that second pairing, why he was the one to get the bump when Pissick went down and not Kislyevich at the beginning. I think it's, you know, they want to balance it out. But I think ultimately Kislyevich is the one when they get to the playoffs, when they start, you know, shortening the bench and stuff, he's going to be moving up because I've really liked what I've seen from him. I was nervous when they played him earlier, when they played him his first game back with the mask and everything. I was like, oh, just give him another like 2 days, like it's not a big deal, please. But pleasantly surprised, he's been pretty good.
He's getting better.
He's a little loose on his handles. You know, like sometimes sometimes he'll bobble a puck or when he tries to do too much of it. But, you know, when he's just moving the puck in and out, he's pretty efficient. You can see why he was relied upon at the national team level and at the KHL level for so long.
Well, it's good scouting. It's like they've made decisions in just getting players that has been good decisions.
When they fire Talon, hire Kekalainen as GM.
Yeah. Well, as long as you keep him on staff, as long as he stays, that's good.
But I mean, if I'm being frank, I think going into the year with the goaltending situation the way it was is a fireable offense
for Talon. Let's
I think he said, I'm risking it on Luongo not getting hurt, on what they publicly said, Luongo playing 50 games. He put his money on that. And at his age, with his resume, with how many years he's been, I mean, this is season 9 of the blueprint, that he knew that he's one of the bullets in the chambers the owners have. It's going to be Capuano is probably going to be the first to go. Assistant coaches are always that. But I think Talon would probably go before Bugner. Just because.
Well, Bugner, you know, they tried to force him out at multiple points. Dale Talon said, nah.
And you know how stingy, you know, this ownership is with coaches.
Maybe not. How many coaches have they fired?
Easier to cut ties with them.
How many coaches have they fired? They fired a lot of them.
They're not still there, but.
Well, true. Well, how many former coaches are they still paying? Four?
Well, none right now, but I mean, if they fire Bugner, you pay him at least until another team offers to pay him.
I don't think they're firing Bugner right now, but Capuano is something I could see happening. Let's go to goaltending.
And I'm saying definitely don't want Bugner fired at least until the end of the year.
Yeah, he's like, not going to get fired until the end of the
year. I don't want a Tom Rowe situation on our hands again, because guess what? It's going to be Jack Capuano. It's going to be Jordy Kinnear or Gordy Kinnear or Greg Kinnear or whoever from the age.
Greg Kinnear. Okay, can we talk about the goaltending? Because I think it is important to say.
Fireball offense for me. Whoever made the decision to go into to the start of the season with those three in net, fired. Absolutely fired.
Okay, I think it is reasonable to think that they expected that it wasn't going to be this bad. Now, they
it's
had
not,
fear that it was going
mean,
to be this
it's
bad.
It's not reasonable that they should expect that.
I think that most
people, they wanted him to play 50 games. He barely played 70 in the last two. You saw how much they used Sateri and Antti Niemi, who by the way is 2-0 already this year on a team that was supposed to be worse than the Panthers.
They jumped on that quick last year.
Oh man, it's like it kind of worked, and they just dumped him, and they're like, oh,
Terry worked, and then he went to Detroit.
Like,
so
honestly, you know who I would fire? Rob Talas.
Well, that's
don't like fire him, but like move him into a different and hire a new goalie coach to take over, because he's been here for how long, and who's the best goalie they developed? That they've had it's not like Rob Talas made Roberto Luongo who he is.
No, he's Roberto Luongo. I want to say about the things that we see. Like, I was watching a little bit of Robin Lehner last night, and obviously the Panthers are never going to be a team that was going to take a chance on Robin Lehner considering what we read about him. But it's hard to not watch Robin Lehner play and think, he would have been better than Hutchinson, because he was better. He looked fine last night.
He would be better than Reimer. I mean, like, my thing is, Reimer should not be should not have started the year on the Panthers. Michael Hutchinson.
The reason why that's not reasonable in terms of just semantics, as much as we would like it to be that case, he has an untradeable contract. We're not like on Scott Darling levels of bad, but you can't trade that contract. As much as you want to, you can't trade it.
Right.
And I did a buyout calculation on Cap Friendly, and if they bought him out next year, it's ugly. I don't know how they could structure it, but I mean, maybe when there's a lockout, there's a compliance buyout for James Reimer.
Here's the thing: I don't think he's untradeable. I mean, look at some of the goalies in the league. I don't think he's untradeable. The thing is, you just package him to a team for a goalie. You move him to a team that just needs a backup goalie for a couple of years during a rebuild or something.
Ottawa?
Or you bury him. You just wave him. And you just eat it.
Do you think Hutchinson gets claimed?
Because, frankly, you're in hockey games. You said the playoffs are a must this year. And you went into it with the most important position in hockey, with a guy who can maybe play 35 games this year, James Reimer and Michael Hutchinson. And you gave – this is why I said playing Samuel Montembeau for one period in the preseason was bullshit. This is why I said not experimenting with different defensive pairs in the year was bullshit. Imagine the season start if all preseason Mattsson and Ekblad played together like they said they were going to. They were talking about playing Mattsson and Ekblad together in like spring last year, and they finally did it like 8 games into the season.
Because they absolutely had to do something.
It's just like...
That's the thing that most annoys me about the Panthers, is they say they're going to do things and then never do it.
Right. And they need to address the goalie situation. Play Sam Montembeau right now. That could be a change they could make to wake up this team.
I called for that.
It can't be worse than James Reimer.
I agree with you. Because he's actually been playing
and it's
really
not like
well.
Either of those guys who went 30 are going to get any better. Like James Reimer is not going to be getting any better. Michael Hutchinson is not going to be getting any better. They're not going to be the answers after Landau.
Nope.
Colorado has Grubauer. They just bought out Orpik for Grubauer, paid a first, signed him to a pretty decent contract, and he's sitting behind Varlamov. What if the Panthers went out and got Varlamov?
Question. I want to ask you a question then, based on this.
You gotta go get Bobrovsky. They gotta go sign some European guys who no one knows about, like Sergei Bobrovsky originally was, and develop them. They gotta do something. It is embarrassing out there how bad these goalies are.
I mean, you also like the Flyers. They can't get a save either. So I mean, but they have at least Carter Hart.
But they'd have more than Carter Hart. They have like 3 Russian goalies, a Czech goalie. They have Felix Sandstrom, who's like almost as good as Carter Hart, in my opinion. And they're still drafting and signing goalies. They have Alex Lyon. They have Michael Neuwirth. Both of those guys I would take over Hutchinson.
I don't disagree with you there.
One of them could be on waivers very soon. And if the Panthers don't pick them up, I don't know what they're doing. They gotta improve in the net very soon, because if they wait until Luongo gets back in roughly 3 weeks, they're gonna be done.
So with all of that said about the goaltending, which everybody watching knows it's terrible, and the Panthers seem to play like they know it's terrible, what should the Panthers do going forward? Because with Luongo, he almost retired at the end of last season and then didn't. His salary goes down as part of that awful backdiving Mike Gillis contract. I still think he retires at the end of the season. Especially if they make it to the postseason, I think that he's going to retire. So what do you do then with the Panthers going forward? Reimer's going to be hard to move, although I think you'll have more of a chance to move him with 2 years on his deal rather than 3. Here's the thing, because we're all going to think about Sergei Bobrovsky right now, because it's going really horribly in Columbus, and it's clear he doesn't want to be there. And all of the links right now are him on Long Island playing with the Islanders. And you have been vocally supportive of him going to Florida. Here's my thought on Bobrovsky, and why I'm worried if that's an option for the Panthers. And it should be. They should do due diligence on him. But here's why I'm concerned if they sign him, because you know what he wants. He wants Carey Price money, which is, what is that AAV? 10.5 something? Right?
Right.
And Carey Price is really good, but I'm not paying a goaltender that much. Right? Carey Price's AAV is 10.5 into the next millennium, basically. It's a really long-term contract that is going to look really ugly when he gets older. Bobrovsky wants something like that. Now, the Panthers wouldn't have to pay him 10.5 because of the tax situation, but still. Sergei Bobrovsky right now in his age is... I'm going to check that. He is 30 years old, so he's only 1 year younger than Carey Price, and he's going to want similar money. He has proven to be a good regular season goaltender, but he is bad in the playoffs. And you know what the Panthers want to do.
Or his team is bad in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, there's that, but would you trust him with this Panthers team?
I'm not sure he's played enough playoff games, really.
But would you right now give him 7 years, $9 million?
No, I would give him $10.5 million for 3 years.
Do you think that he would take that though? Because like
I mean, it's the Panthers' job to sell him on, hey, we can give you $10 million for 3 years in sunny Florida. You have a bunch of Russian speakers, and if with you behind, with you in the crease for 3 years, we have three shots at winning the cup.
That is a way I would sign Bobrovsky. If it was a
and you get and
contract,
he can try it out. You trade for him now, and he got the whole year to try it on for size.
You'd have $11 million invested in your goaltender. I mean, you'd have to give him Reimer and other interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Columbus will take Reimer because Korpisalo is their starter, and Reimer's a decent guy to back him up in the beginning. And you're taking a lot of cap hit from Columbus, so they kind of expect to either to eat some or take some back, and that's going to be Reimer.
I don't think it's a terrible idea. I said the only way I'd even consider Bobrovsky is if it was for 3 years. You know, because
I would go up to five, depending on what the cap it is. Here's the thing, because here's how I sell it. As a goalie and as a winner of a Vezina trophy multiple times, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's going to get a certain amount of money, and he's worth a certain amount of money. You know, this is the area of need that. And by getting Bobrovsky, who I think can be good for 3 to maybe 5 more years, all you need him to be good is for 3, give you 3 years to find another goalie to take his spot.
And at that point, if Montembeau's not the answer, they will have drafted somebody or got somebody.
The thing is, you can't risk it on a James Reimer type, and that's who they've gone to. And like at that point, how much money and time and effort did they put into James Reimer? And look at the output. What's the gap? What's the difference between that? I mean, like, yeah, but Rossi for $10 million might be a lot, but he's a goalie. He plays every minute when he plays. He's the last line of defense. If he messes up, it's a goal against for sure. And, yeah, you know, you can explain it, you know, if Barkov and Ekblad and all these people have an issue with it being so much higher, you can explain it as, well, you know, he's a goalie. Like, it's a different...
He's the last guy.
It doesn't break your cap structure. Like, it's not like...
For 3 years, Barkov, like, Ekblad, and all of them are going to be up around the time he's up anyway.
If you re-sign Mike Hoffman, say, for $8 million, that's going to be more of an issue. I think that breaks your cap structure. Then you have to have an awkward conversation maybe with Huberto's agent, who's kind of used to these conversations, like, hey, how come you paid this guy more money than my guy? And, you know, I want more money. Get me more money.
Hoffman move was genius.
Right. So, I mean, like, that's the thing. If Hoffman resigns, he's got to fit into a cap structure. If you're looking at a goalie to put you over the hump that has two Veznas, if you tell Barkov, we got you a Russian goalie with two Veznas to help you win a cup in the next 3 years. Because here's the thing. The window's starting for the Panthers. Hopefully no GM comes out and says it publicly because that's a nightmare. But Barkov's starting to enter his prime. All these guys are starting to enter these primes at relatively low cost, and you're running out of years. You need a Bobrovsky-type goalie. Like, Varlamov is like 1 year stopgap level good. You need that, like, you need Varlamov level or better goalie right now. Mm-hmm. And they should have been doing this in the offseason. Now they have to kind of make
you
things.
You have 3 more years of Barkov after this. You have 4 more years of Huberto. You've got 3 more years of Trocheck.
Your 3 more years of Barkov, that's your window.
Yep. Because Barkov, I mean, once he gets to year whatever, once the contract's up, he's doubling his salary.
Well, here's the thing. Is he going to want to sign after 3 years if they don't have their shit together? No. If he's still looking for a save, if he's still playing his ass off defensively and to only have it end up in the back of the net because James Reimer blockers it into the net again like he did last night and most other nights he's in the net. I mean, like, it gets frustrating. He's going to want to go play with Line A, Winnipeg, where they tell Line A, don't play defense. Don't worry about it. We have defensemen who actually take care of it.
And we have Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, a goalie who, you know, takes care of it.
How about if you hear a couple
if Luongo, if Luongo was even 37, this wouldn't be an issue.
Okay, how about how about other options that people will bring up? How about, if Bobrovsky's not an option, would you trade for Henrik Lundqvist?
I'd have to look at that contract again.
He has 8.5 left for 2 more years.
Here's the thing. When he retires, is it like a Luongo situation?
No.
Where it goes to the Rangers? No.
It is a 2 more years at 8.5 million cap hit, and that's it.
2 more years?
2 more years after this.
Here's the thing. Do you think Henrik Lundqvist can play more games than Luongo?
Think the answer is probably yes to playing more games. Can he play better? I don't know what he'd look like with a good team in front of him because the Rangers have never been good defensively.
You can only do it if you know for sure Luongo's retiring at the end of the year.
I'm all this saying Luongo's retiring. This is all the speculation is for. Would you do Hank over Bobrovsky if all things were equal?
No. Would you do
Hank over Bobrovsky if Bobrovsky were to take 7 years?
All things being like, Bobrovsky is the number one goalie target for me. I've been a big fan of him since he was signed by the Flyers, and it's not just bias. I mean, I think he's backed it up to a pretty good point where he's one of the best goalies in the league. And yes, he's 30, but the Panthers are in a need, and you know they keep saying they have money. And they have a good cap structure. If they can limit the term, if they don't go seven years. I mean, like if they can't go 6, 7, 8 years, I think they're fine. Like you have to remember, maybe you can go 8 years because there is going to be another lockout,
and then you immediately buy him out,
and you get protection.
The Panthers would have to buy out somebody, and you know that's not something they like to do.
Right, but I mean,
the only way I do Bobrovsky is if
can get you a cup. Like, let's be honest, he could get them a cup. He's that good with the forwards they have, especially the centers that they have, especially if they keep Borgstrom as a center and they run Barkov, Trocheck, Borgstrom as their three centers when they're in the playoffs, winning series and running for a cup with Bobrovsky. And I mean, they can hobble together a defense that's good enough. It's really just been, if you think about it, Ekblad has barely had a good defensive coach his whole entire NHL career. He had nobody the first year. He had, like, John Madden, like, kind of taking it over, and then him officially taking it over the next year. Now he's got, like, Jack Capuano.
And Tom Rowe, God forbid.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, if this D's not that bad, I think you lose Pissek, you trade Petrovic, and you bring up some of these guys. Like Riley Stillman looks like he's going to be pretty solid in a couple, for at least as a depth guy. Same with Thomas Šemtić. Max Gilden looks like he's going to at least be an NHL defenseman. They drafted pretty well. They'll turn up the heat and draft a little more defensive focus over the next couple of years, but they have all the pieces. If they can get a goalie, you can start saying that they can be a contender. If they have Bobrovsky for 3 years starting next year, I give them a shot of being in the Eastern Conference Finals at least once.
I agree with you.
And that's worth it. That's so worth it. Even if you have to sign them to a $50 million 5-year contract.
Yeah, I'm saying 50 over 5 is something I do. And the thing is, he might want Carey Price money, but Carey Price has
close to Carey Price money.
Well,
and why it's in a way better tax. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. But it's also, like, that's a much better tax thing. But it's also, you're selling them. This isn't, like, who's going to give you the Carey Price deal? Arizona? Would they give you the Carey Price? Like, the Islanders? Do you want to go there? Or do you want to win a cup in your prime right now? You couldn't win the Olympic gold last year. That's got to be burning. That's got to be itching at you, huh? We look at all these Russian speakers. We have Denis Malgin who speaks Russian. We have
Barkov who speaks Russian. Seven guys that speak Russian.
And you have more. And you're gonna have more coming. You got Denisenko who's coming. And you know there's gonna be more.
Let's see. Barkov, Mamin, Dadanov,
and then
Levitch, Malgin.
And then the other benefit of going out and paying for quality goalies, just like they went out and sucked it up. I didn't complain with. I mean, like, I was worried about the Luongo contract, and I hated to see Markstrom go, but I knew you had to pay, you had to give to get, you had to pay to get good goaltending. I'm a Flyers fan. I know it all too well. Sometimes you pay expensively to get bad goaltending.
Brzgalov.
Right. But this is a different Russian beast. This is...
Well, I think also, you know, for Bobrovsky, there's still pressure in Florida. I mean, the only pressure is internal. Right.
I think that it would be a good spot.
And also, of course, it does help that...
It's one fan's
team
opinion.
Right now, the only team in the NHL that's more Russian than the Panthers is the Capitals. That's it.
And they're not going to need a goalie. Their AHL goalie, Vasenik or whatever, was just named like AHL player of the week or month, and he's like number two.
And they have Ilya Samsonov.
Yeah, so like, you know, and they have Holtby right now. Like, he's going.
He's great. I want to get quickly to, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the Bobrovsky situation develops, because we have not seen the Panthers name linked with him yet, but I'm pretty sure next offseason they will be if he gets to free agency.
If he gets to free agency, I think it's up to Viola to back up the money truck.
And, well, at this point, like, he's spent.
If he's in the UFA, I think that's when you just okay a 7-year deal, and you just like, all right, whatever you get will match. Like, you know, like, that's bring it home, baby. Like, that's just win.
That would be the only signing you'd have to make next offseason.
Well, I mean, if you're waiting till next offseason and July next offseason and you didn't get it done at the draft, you're in desperation mode. You have to back up the Briggs truck. That's the only tool left in the toolbox at that point.
Well, I think that next year they absolutely are going to draft a goaltending. It's an option.
But that's not going to, yeah. I mean, like,
that's guarantee it.
What they do in the future is, you know, this isn't 5-card stud. You want to have, like, you know, 20-card pick 'em. Because
you have a bunch of options.
I mean, like, the Flyers have 5 to 6 viable options if Carter Hart doesn't pan out, and you aim for half of that. I mean, that's a little overkill, and it's really hard, and you have to really focus to get that many good goaltenders. But
why,
you know, if you'd have three or four
one of them,
right? Yeah, I mean, like, and you can you do it like they've been drafting. They drafted guys in the 6th round who are a little older and played in pro leagues and showed themselves well.
Mamin, Repo, etc.
They've drafted high value, high reward, low risk, you know, players who maybe don't fit the mold. Maybe they find like a 5'11", 6-foot goalie who's super talented, but he's just not tall enough or not thick enough to be a good goalie. But they roll the dice on him, and it turns out to be, you know, Uzi Saros good.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, start doing stuff like that.
Here's the other scenario I want to mention before we talk about Springfield, before we end the show. If they failed on Bobrovsky, if they gave 3 years 7-ish or a little bit lower to Pecorine, would you be okay with that?
No, Pecorine's done. He's like Luongo. He's done. You might as well just keep Luongo at that point.
So would you trade for Hank for him?
100%, yeah.
Okay, just checking that. All right, let's talk Thunderbirds.
Because the thing is, Pekka's had the team and hasn't been able to get it done. And Luongo hasn't had the team. I mean, you know, Henrik hasn't had the team recently. You're not sure if he still has it or not. But you kind of think he does.
Like,
so.
I somehow think it's more likely the Panthers trade for Hank than it is they get Bobrovsky. But we'll see what they do. I think they're going to do something, because that's the big card that Dale Talon can play. The card for the forwards is Borgstrom, and he hasn't had to play that card yet.
He shouldn't play right now.
And
I mean,
at this point, since Borgstrom's down there and you're getting good enough from the forwards, you don't need to bring up Borgstrom at this point. The card is for defense, it's Fire Capuano, and for goaltending, it's trade for somebody.
Can we talk about how Bobby Farnham hasn't played a game yet?
He has not played a game yet?
No.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not, because I think that I don't want to take all the credit, but I think, you know, enough people on Twitter brutalized Springfield's lineup decisions last year. And it had terrible results. There's no way they could deal with that all over again. I mean,
especially in a year they're hosting the All-Star game.
You got to have a better team. They're just a better. They knew it. They couldn't hide away, even though they wouldn't have a small budget, and they're a better team. I don't know what's going to happen when Harry Zolnerchuk stops getting force-fed minutes. And Paul Thompson stopped getting force-fed minutes. I mean, what's happening is they're being run out like 18, 20 minutes a game, and they're putting in the work right now. They're working, so you don't want to dial it back now. But all of a sudden, that line maybe is going to die off, and that's when they got to start giving Borgstrom more minutes because he's not really getting enough, and he's putting up, you know, probably better scoring rates and.
So how are players doing in Springfield in terms of stats and play? Because Montembeau has apparently been playing pretty well now that this is his team again.
The better people to ask would be someone who's watched more and complete games. I've only watched parts of some games. But
Montembeau's for a future podcast. We'll get somebody who covers the Falcons. The Falcons. Thunderbirds. Springfield Falcons used to be their old team. Put a dollar in the swear jar every time I do that.
Montembeau has played three games, has a 9-4-1 and a 2-0-1 goals against average.
That's pretty good.
They have an ECHL level goalie playing right now, but that's because Hutchinson's up. And he's doing pretty well, though. He has a 9-19 and a 2-8-9 in two games.
Which goalie is this?
Chris Dreger.
Oh, I don't. I kept thinking it was Evan Cowley.
They never really liked him.
Okay.
I don't understand. I wish he was good enough to be in this role. That's for sure. But you know, this Hutchinson's played one game and had like a 9.57. So he's not Hutchinson when he played in the AHL wasn't too bad either. They're playing well. I mean, the teams they're winning. I inexplicably The lineups are better. I've been just screenshotting a lot of them just to see what
He's
the pattern is.
He's been texting me the lineups, and I'm like, it's better than I feared it was going to be.
It's halfway better. So it's early in the year. They're winning. It's halfway better. I have no complaints. But, like, Borgstrom's line mates are, like, Joel Lowry and Jace Hauerlock or Jake Horton and, not Sebastian Repo or Patrick Bykov. Patrick Bykov and Sebastian Rebo are doing okay, but not as well because they're getting stuck in like 4 or 5 minutes. And that's not really the point of the AHL when you have, 20-some-year-old, never-been-prospect guys who are like, just a couple years older than Patrick Bykov, maybe not even 2 years older than him, getting fed better minutes and, for no real apparent reason and doing okay. But I think they're leaving some goals on the table. Defensively,
like, this team could be like the old Toronto Marlies.
Well, I mean, I think that's a dream. I think that right now they're being expectedly as good as we could expect. I'm happy with that.
The Thunderbirds have been terrible.
I really want to get Ian McCoshin a better partner. I think that is what I want to see. He's right now playing with Matt Mangine.
Another NHL guy.
Who's a forward. He's one of these guys who in Division I played forward in defense, and these are common. And it's not like it's because he's really good at both. It's usually because they're the practice players and they're depth players and they have to be moved around to accommodate the open spots and stuff.
They'll do it because they want to play.
But I think Ian McCoshin's at the age and the point is development where he needs to be playing with guys of his skill level. He needs to be playing with the best to bring out his best because he's either at the time where he has to become an NHL defenseman or he has to become trade bait. And even if it's just Colby Roback getting a fifth back or a sixth back for him, you got to there has to be some churn. You can't let these guys stagnate forever like they're letting Jace Haraluk do right now. And Ian McCoshin, second round pick, you know, just like Jake Haraluk, you know, they got to get something out of him. And I love Josh Brown. I love Josh Brown. But, you know, Josh Brown getting a better defensive partner than Ian McCoshin is concerning to me. I know it's a little bit about balance and yada, 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 but that means Matt Mangin's playing a lot of minutes he shouldn't. And it's working out now, but I can see a reality in which it does not.
Absolutely. Is there any other NHL
school? Julian Melchiori still doing thumbs up. He could be a good call
really
up. It's
funny how they sign guys like Melchiori and McDonald, and they end up being better than anybody else on the team. It's really funny.
Well, let's
how
be
that
honest, okay? Let's be honest. There was a point where the Kulikovs and Gabranson got to a point where, all right, they're not who we thought they are. It's time to move on. They're depth guys. We got to cycle them out. Yes. Now, we got guys back. We got McCann back for that. It's worked out great. We got Pisick. It worked out good the first year. It was okay, and it's been going down ever since. Time to just move on and plug somebody else in that spot. We have a lot of good young D. We have a lot of good middle-aged D. And we have Julian Melchiori, who's 28 and is a good guy to fill in the gaps when everybody else can't, is either hurt, sick, on a, you know, on a cold streak or whatever.
Or on Robita Island.
Yeah, and, you know, that gives more minutes to the Riley Stillmans. That gives more minutes to Tomo Shumtip. So you hope that they're planning that, and it's, you know, they want to get some churn going, and they're figuring out on maybe a later time frame, which wouldn't surprise me given their late time frames with defensive changes and defensive switches at the NHL level.
Yeah, they'll switch the forwards up, but they now just switch the defensemen up. So the Panthers play one more game before Finland, and that's against the Devils. I'd like them to win because then I get to gloat to my friend, because that's good. And the Devils are once again playing way above their heads, which of course they are, because Keith Kincaid is somehow good, and some idiotic team's going to give him a $1 billion contract. Hopefully it's not the Panthers, but they might. And then they go to Finland to play the Jets, and I mean, I'm here for all the Barkov Laine stories. Then actually watching the games is probably going to be painful because the Jets are way better. But
and probably will be wearing some cool new jersey that they decided great for marketing and sales and fan
They do
engagement.
Have new blue uniforms, and that shade of blue is suspiciously like the shade of blue on the Finnish flag.
I love it. I think the Panthers are really missing out on an opportunity. I mean, obviously they have internal metrics and algorithms that say differently. But, you know, when has that ever seen
the third jersey at some point? It's just not going to be what we want it to be.
You know, these are the same algorithms that said Keith Yanda would be a good long-term investment. So I don't know if they're always right.
We've praised old management, and then we've buried them for Reimer and Yandel.
I mean, I've just been burying them for Reimer and Yandel.
Well, I mean, but have you listened to these podcasts? We've been burying them for years now, but I don't think we should do that again. I think it's pretty obvious that the Yandel and Reimer contracts were good. Is there anything else in the NHL that you wanted to talk about specifically? Gritty being on birthday cakes is an amazing thing that I have seen and I enjoy greatly.
Yeah, that's going to be on my next birthday cake.
Won't be on mine, but I'm not surprised it'll be on yours.
It's going to be on the one I send to you.
Do you know what my birthday even is?
It starts with a J.
It starts with a J. I'm not going to give you the answer to this on the air. I might not even give you the answer to this off the air. So I might get a Gritty birthday cake at some point in a random month. Anyway.
It won't be random. It'll start with a J.
It'll start with a J. So I've got January and July. I'll give you a hint. One of them's closer to my actual birthday.
June?
You have to pick that up too. It could be June as well. One of them's closer to my actual birthday. Anyway, is there anything else in the NHL that you want to mention? I think in terms of like watching the league this year, hey, do we have to give NBCSN a tap on the shoulder for actually covering a game with all Canadian teams? I would have watched it last night if I wasn't completely occupied with other things.
I can't believe it took this long. Very happy about it. I hope the numbers back it up. I watched.
They won.
I did think of things.
Actually, you know what? I can actually get you the information.
I was way more excited about that game than most games that they've put on a Wednesday, for sure. But again, I'm not the most patriotic person, quote unquote.
Okay. Let's play guess the ratings for that game. How many
0.8.
Thousands of viewers. Viewers. Viewership very important here.
0.8 on the Richter scale.
0.8 on the Richter scale. How many viewers does that register as?
850,000.
You're not even close.
235,000.
You're still too high.
68,000.
Okay, now we're getting to Fox Sports 1 levels. Not that bad.
192.
167.
Oof.
I knew it was going to be that bad because the World Series was on last night, and that was my fear.
And
it's
America's
not as bad as I
on.
Thought it was going to be. I thought it was honestly going to be worse. I hope it doesn't discourage them from doing more of it, but that's what the number was.
Yeah, the World Series, Boston, L.A. That's going to be a big – that's going to kill everything else.
Well,
sure.
The ratings last night for that game were 13.458 million, which is not actually that high considering it's Boston and Los Angeles. Would you like to guess what the game –
I'm sure many people in L.A. turned it on too late.
Maybe they did. What would you think the Tampa Bay Colorado game that started after that, what were the ratings for that game? What do you think they were be?
120.
177. So it actually did better ratings, but not by much.
That's not surprising. Colorado is hella fun to watch this year. I would say that they're my team in the West. I'm following a lot. I'll probably watch all 82 this year. I haven't missed a game yet.
And then last night they got shut out by the Lightning. Can we say that the Lightning are going to just be...
Good game, though.
It was a fun game for the bits I watched. Can we just say that the Lightning are once again going to be a civilized destroyer of worlds?
Yeah, and that's the level Florida could be at.
That's the level everyone wants them to be at.
A Tampa. They could be a Tampa. You look at how Tampa plays, and you watch how they support the puck. When Kucherov has two guys on him, he can easily make a little bump pass. He can easily drop the puck into an open spot. He knows where his players are consistently going to be around him. And that's not always the case. But when Tampa Bay gets in a situation, it's not picking their head up, oh, my God, what do I do? They instinctively know what to do because they've done it over and over and over again, and their execution level is very high.
This includes playing Ryan Callahan too many minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, like there are some things and issues to Tampa Bay as a team and their organization, and you know they haven't won a cup yet, and that could be one reason why that you know they've done some weird you know New York Ranger idolization in the past couple of years.
But do you think that's going to stop now that what's his face Breezeball is the GM?
It depends on who was idolizing it. It could have been Vinick, who's like, oh, I want this guy. I watch
Don't
him a lot.
Think that's that was a Viola move, though, idolizing everything Rangers.
Well, I mean, maybe he just liked some guys with that type
well,
of...
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Like, the Lightning have claimed a lot of, like, I mean, they developed Marchessault, and then they claimed Martel from the Flyers. And everybody was like, oh, that's going to be the next Marchessault or something like that.
Yeah, I mean they do good stuff, they do bad stuff.
I mean they do have Dan Girardi, and he is quite.
They only do a few bad things, but the thing is, for some reason, when they're like Chicago in a bit now. Chicago does it at a whole different level, but things get a little better when they go to Tampa Bay. Like Braden Coburn goes from Philadelphia to Tampa, and he becomes a solid angel defenseman again.
Ryan McDonough?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan McDonough has looked a little better.
What's really funny about the Lightning right now?
Girardi, I think, looks better.
Do you know what's really funny watching the Lightning right now? When you watch them play and you look at... it's funny. Look at Steven Stamkos right now. He's played 8 games, and he has the same number of points as Nick Bjugstad, which is 4. And the Lightning are still destroying people. Like,
it's a luxury. It really is.
At that point, Steven Stamkos is a luxury player. Is that that's just crazy to think about? I love the.
That could be us, but the old is tripping.
Yeah, pretty much. Is there anything otherwise in the NHL you want to mention? Do you want to talk about, is Connor McDavid a better player than Sidney Crosby? I know what Crosby did against the Oilers, but...
Here's the thing. Crosby just went to Matthews and McDavid and just was like, listen, I'm still the best. One day when I retire...
On a road trip. That's yes, that did happen.
Yeah, and he shut him down. I mean, there's a... McDavid can do whatever he wants at full speed with the puck. If he can't do it at full speed, if he doesn't have the puck, he's not much of a threat. He can't shut other teams' top players down. I don't think McDavid in the playoffs can shut down a Crosby, a Matthews, or somebody like that.
In the West,
I would say the same thing with Matthews.
Joe Thornton.
Right, yeah.
Ryan Johansson.
And I think
telling me is that you would rather have Alexander Barkov in the players in the playoffs than Connor McDavid.
I would rather have him in a pickup game. I mean, I would just rather have
it. You just basically called Connor McDavid the world's greatest player of shinny.
I would.
That's what you've done there.
He's like Patrick Kane. Like, he's really good at certain things. He's like a silly level at certain things. Like, how does he do it? You know, blah, blah, blah. And you get all the YouTube reaction videos. It's great. But there's a lot of things, you know, other players do better than him. And it's okay to admit that every once in a while.
He's playing, what is it, like 20
Those things
minutes
are
at even
really
strength?
Important. Yeah, I mean...
Okay, has Todd McClellan said in a post-game press conference yet that McDavid's burnt out? Just out of curiosity.
No, but one is a former San Jose head coach who probably at one point was worth his weight in salt in the league, and the other is a former San Jose assistant coach who still doesn't really know what the speed of the NHL and the NHL game is from behind the bench.
Okay, I'm going to ask you two final questions here because we could be on the verge of seeing a lot of coaches getting fired in the league. Seems like there's a lot of pressure on after last year. There were no coaches fired in season. If you had the choice right now between Todd McClellan and Bob Bugner, who would you pick? I think I know the answer to this, but who would you pick?
God, I want to pick a gun to my head. I would probably say Todd McClellan because at one point I was a big Todd McClellan supporter. In the same vein, at one point, I kind of liked Alain Vigneault. So,
because you did very well.
Well,
what your question was going to be.
Coaches, they have short shelf lives. They have, you know, like they have one way of doing things, and very quickly you find out whether it works for your team or not.
And I'm going to ask the other question.
After a while,
you're gonna hate me asking.
You know what they are, so you know whether they're going to.
And now to end this podcast, I'm going to ask the other question you're going to hate me asking. Would the Panthers be better right now with Gerard Gallant and his propensity to play fourth liners too much?
I think the defense would be better. I think the team play would be better. They'd be a more cohesive unit. I'm not sure they would. I'm sure they would probably have more points and wins. I'm not sure that they're. Yeah, I mean, yes, they would be better because it would be better than Boone. It just flatly would be better than Boone. And I was trying to find a way to not say that, but
well,
it's hard.
What you're saying is that they'd have a better team,
but
they might
I don't
not have the same
think
sort of offense.
Yeah, they don't have the same, they wouldn't have the same. Well, maybe they would because look at what he's done in Vegas. He,
well, I hear I actually going to go. Hold on a second before we leave. Now, I want to like look at the Golden Knights stats because I feel like we should do that because they've had their struggles this season. Hey, regression to the mean is a tough thing to crack, isn't it? I'm gonna look at their stats right now because I actually haven't paid attention to it. Marchessault's got 10 points. William Karlsson's got 8. Riley Smith has 5. And Pacioretty's only go, Jesus, he's got 2 points in 8 in 9 games? Oi.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Oy. I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like goal scorers like them, they either hit it off and they have, like, 8 goals in 8 games with their new team, or they take a while to get going, or they're,
well,
you know,
I'm
like,
focused
they're
on the fact that,
feast
like,
or famine type
like,
guys.
The Panthers have more players right now. Like, they don't have anybody with as much as Marchessault, but they've got 9-8-8-7 or something like that, and it's 10-8-5, and then it's off the cliff for Vegas.
They're also playing... All right, Panthers have played majority backup goalies. Not every team has that luxury.
Well, let's see. They played Vasilevsky. They played Corpusalo. They played Nielsen. They played Elliott and Pickard. They played Holtby, and they chased him, and then they played Copley. Then they played Jimmy Howard. They played Hank's backup, and then Lehner, who's better than Grice. So I don't know who Vegas played, but anyway. Also, they signed Nate Schmidt to a long extension today.
Terrible.
Yeah, that wasn't a good contract.
Makes me feel better about Matheson's contract.
Yeah, they're giving out a lot of contracts right now to Golden Misfits. Alex Tuch got 4.75. That seems like a little bit much too, isn't it?
That was the problem of success in year one.
They're getting married to it. I mean, they made enough moves, like with Stastny.
It's why the intentional tank was never a bad idea. Build up the fan base the hard way. It sucks, but in the end, you have a long-term, deeper franchise, and you'll do better things.
Second-guessing the Vegas Golden Knights. We're still doing that on this show.
Second-guessing. They got put in a unimaginable position, and they made a gut call, and they almost won with it.
Even though they traded for Thomas Tatar.
Like, if they were, what, 2-3 games away from it, like, okay, yeah, they just maybe are going to suck for now, or maybe they're going to tail off, but they won a cup year one, like Cinderella stuff. There's going to be movies. There's going to be – they've done something. You know, it would have paid off the ultimate prize. So they came close to it, so you can't fault them. You know, it's not second-guessing and blaming them, but, you know, there is going to be some – tough times, and you wish they reacted a little better to it than just doubling down and signing Nate Dope Schmidt to...
Wait a minute. Hold on. I have to check, because hold on a second. I want to see something before we end this show for real now. Like, is Nate Schmidt making more... Nate Schmidt is making more money next year than every forward except Paul Stastny.
Yeah, and he's
making,
like,
more money. Okay, Pacioretty's making $7 next year.
Nate Schmidt is like he's the type of defenseman that's really good on the third pair, pretty average to can be good on the second pair, but he just gets hyped up because he's flashy, he's got a big personality, and people like him.
Okay,
I mean, he's a $4 million, $5 million best defenseman. And he's getting close to almost $7 million. Is that right?
He's getting nearly $6 million.
What's he at?
It is, the contract is, I will tell you, it is 5.95.
5.95. Yeah, that's $6 million. Like, yeah, that's just $6 million.
The Panthers defenseman making $6 million include Aaron Ekblad and Keith Yandel.
Yeah, and like, I'm going to be honest with you, I'd rather have Keith Yandel than Nate Schmidt. I mean, maybe not right now, but like, if you said Nate Schmidt at this deal or finish out Keith Yandel at his deal, I'm finishing out Keith Yandel.
Oh, I'd finish out Keith Yandel too, because that contract ends sooner.
Yeah, and like, just I don't think Nate Schmidt's ever going to get to Keith Yandel, Norris conversation. Like,
Keith Yandel's got some offense in his game.
Keith Yandel has had a career that he's going to be able to look back on. He's going to have the Iron Man streak. He's going to have a few years where he came close to being in the top three of the Norris, and a few years where he was, I think, in the top three, like second or third in voting. Like, he got pretty high. He was highly regarded for a few years. Not many D can say that, and I don't think Nate Schmidt will ever be able to say that. Probably don't want to put blinders or limits on people, but if I'm putting millions of dollars on it as a franchise, not too sure.
Okay, I'll buy that. I'll absolutely buy that. So, that's the Why Hockey Periodical podcast. We will talk to you next week when we talk about Finland. Lots of things about Finland and how amazing it is. It's a great country.
Please, everybody, start tweeting goalies that you like or you want the Panthers to get at. Tweet it at Why Hockey and tweet it at Florida Panthers. Just let them know and let us
and
know.
Tweet at Matt's Music's one too. I would like to hear your opinions. Or alternatively, you could do what I did when I said the Borgstrom sending down was stupid, and then all of Panthers Twitter got in my mentions after that. You could do that as well if you want.
Right.
Sometimes, I mean, like, that's the... Well,
Just do it. Just tell them. Just be like, we want Bobrovsky. Trade for Bobrovsky. Just get
them. You know what? They read the comments, so they'll do it.
Take all of our season ticket holder money. We want you going after Bobrovsky. You went after Talbot. You missed. I mean, how many years have you been trying to get the guy after Luongo? They've been trying to get the guy after Luongo so long, they had to go and get Luongo back.
Pretty much.
And now they're getting the guy.
So long.
Right? So,
and certainly he's better than Alex Auld. Is James Reimer better than Alex Auld?
What will anybody, like, let's just think about this logistically before we sign off. Will anybody get mad at the Florida Panthers if they pony up and drop market value for Sergei Bobrovsky? If they trade, you know, Owen Tippett and, like, James or something, and to get Sergei Bobrovsky, and then when time comes, they pony up and they may sign him to, like, a big long-term contract and stuff, but, and if things don't go well, are people really going to get mad? Probably not.
No, I don't think anybody would get mad. They'll only get mad in hindsight.
Like, even if they get, like, this guy, he's won two Vezinas. I mean, this isn't Bobrovsky. This isn't a Brizgalov coming in who, you know, did kind of well for maybe a, you know, like, Bobrovsky's won Vezinas. He's proven it to a large extent. And it's not going to be a 10-year, you know, like, it's not going to be this huge contract. It's at best going to be 60, 65 million.
I mean, like, the ideal would say, we'll pay you more AAV if you take fewer years.
Yeah, and, like, you know, you can sell that to people. And you have – the Florida Panthers have to start selling themselves to people. I don't want – there's no more excuse of we can't go out and get somebody. You can. You totally can go out and go get someone. You have to always be on the phone and going to get people. I'm tired of waiting for them – to go out and get the needed pieces, waiting until the next offseason or waiting to the year. They have to be getting these people now.
You heard it here, Officer Bob to South Florida. Your service has been requested.
Make it happen.
Well.
Put in the paperwork.
Yeah, well, at this point.
The union wants them.
Or just have them just do all the ads in Russian. Just have Barkov and Malgin and Mammon and Dadanoff and Kislevich.
How much would it take to take out an ad in the Wall Street Journal in that, like, have that is in Russian that says Bobrovsky to, like, the Panthers?
I don't know whether that would fly at this point, so I don't think we should suggest doing that. But how about just Officer Bob, your president?
I'm gonna say I'm gonna put in something that, you know, the Panthers ownership will read. Maybe, like, in Guns and Ammo or American Flag Fetish Monthly or whatever.
I'm not going there. All right, Officer Bob DeSalfour, your presence has been requested. And for that, we'll see you next time on the Why Hockey Periodical podcast, where maybe the Panthers by that point will have a regulation win.